You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Wisconsin Wakes Up here. Back to Daybreak with Brian and Jamie.
Good morning. We hope that your Monday's off to a great start. If you're listening in Wausau on WXCO or in Appleton and Oshkosh on WISS or in Richland Center on WRCE, we are glad that you decided to join us on this Monday. My name is Jamie Martinson.
Good morning. I'm Brian Noonan. We are glad you're here. Let's turn our attention to the golf because there's going to be a lot of talk about different aspects of that this hour. In fact, we have a civics lesson based on one of the things that is happening in the Gulf region in the Iran war. U.S. President Trump appeared to set a Tuesday, 8 o'clock Eastern time deadline for Iran to reopen the Strait of Hormuz following a profanity-laced message warning of attacks on its infrastructure. Iranian officials say the strait will reopen when they are, quote, fully compensated for war damages.
Good luck. Oh, I was just going to say, good luck. Are they going to wait 2 weeks
for their
attack?
He hasn't fully compensated the people who demolished the East Wing.
No, not yet. There might still be people from projects in the 1980s that are waiting for full compensation from Donald Trump. Iranian security chief has been killed, according to Iran's Islamic Revolutionary Guards corpse. They say their head of intelligence was killed early this morning. Israeli Defense Minister Israel Katz said that Major General Majid Kademi was directly responsible for the deaths of Israeli citizens.
I gave you the one with all the names. Six children were among those killed in overnight Israel. U.S. strikes on Iran. State media reported that. Two people were killed and two are missing after an Iranian strike on a residential building in Haifa, Israel.
And finally, headlines out of Iran this morning. Trump will hold a news conference later today on the rescue of an F-15 crew member whose jet was downed over Iran. Do you think he's going to take questions from the press and talk about the tweet,
No. The
Truth Social post that he put out yesterday morning on Easter, where he praised
Allah? They'll try to ask him. He will then call them fake news and everything. And there's no way this would happen. I wish somebody from the Joint Chiefs would give this press conference about the rescue.
Me too.
Because this is, by all accounts, an unbelievably dangerous, heroic measure to rescue this pilot. The coordination between not only the CIA but the military to get it done far behind enemy lines. I want to hear it without the grandiose backslapping that Donald Trump will put on, like he theorized and planned and executed this. I want to hear from the people who were directly involved in it because it deserves its own credit. It deserves to be celebrated.
Right.
But he will not give it that. He will make it about himself as he does with everything. So that's unfortunate. But we can't let that take away from the celebration of this really successful, very impressive military operation, which came out successful. All right, well, that's some of the things you need to know, but there's always more S you need to know.
It's a wake-up call in more ways than one. Time for some you need to know.
Yes. Jamie, this is right out of the playbook.
It is.
This first story. I'm so angry, but I sound like I'm happy. That's the thing. I push it down. Push it down. Everybody thinks I'm happy till I snap.
Squash it.
Yes, I'm going to squash it. So, this was in the playbook.
Yes, absolutely. President Donald Trump now wants the Transportation Security Administration, TSA, they've been in the news a lot lately, to turn over more airport security screening to private companies, at least according to his new 2027 budget proposal that was released on Friday. Boy, oh boy, is that an anti-people budget. The issue gained traction in recent weeks as many airports across the country saw long lines at checkpoints due to the ongoing partial government shutdown that left TSA employees without paychecks. Of course, the president's latest push is part of this annual proposal that was submitted by the Office of Management and Budget to Congress and is a largely symbolic reflection of the president's priorities for the upcoming fiscal year. Now, Friday's budget proposal suggests that federal government should begin the process of privatizing TSA's airport security screening. It would require small airports to enroll in TSA screening partnership program under which TSA pays for private screeners. The administration says that this move would save $52 million and begin reform of a troubled federal agency. I thought Elon was supposed to handle all that. At any rate, currently 20 airports in the United States already have private companies operating the security checkpoints under contracts supervised by the TSA. They include San Francisco International, Kansas City International, Orlando, Sanford, and 17 smaller airports that participate. Here's my question on this.
Yeah.
Is it going to mean? I've got two, actually. What is it going to mean for airports like Dane County Regional, Milwaukee Mitchell International, or Green Bay Austin Strobel International Airport? And is this pitch more about lining his inner circle's pockets? Because who is going to own these companies? And who's going to actually be getting this money? Those are the questions you should be asking yourself about this.
The first question, the answer is probably based on track record. They don't care how it's going to affect those airports. The second question is the most important. The question is who owns these companies and how much does he stand to pocket off of privatization of TSA? That's what it is. Because until the government shutdown, there really wasn't a problem with TSA.
Right.
People were not waiting in. So, you know, if you were there at rush hour on the day before Thanksgiving,
you were
waiting
wait.
In line for right. But on regular days, you weren't waiting that long.
No.
So there wasn't a problem till he created the problem. And we knew this was coming. This was part of Project 2025. This is no surprise. And now it's happening, and people are going to be like, well, you know, maybe that's – didn't you see all those lines? Yeah, why were there all those lines?
Yeah.
It all falls into place. It's not hard to figure out.
I mean, this is why during the entire TSA DHS shutdown, which, by the way, is still not completely solved, the Congress has been on recess, at least TSA has gotten their paychecks. The lines at the airports don't seem to be as obnoxious as they were during the shutdown when nobody was getting paychecks. But this is what I kept coming back to. This president likes to manufacture problems so that he can go in and either A, be the solver of said problems, or in this particular case, B, particularly line the pockets of donors or people within his circle and his orbit. So there's there's always a reason for the things that are happening. And it's usually because it comes back to benefiting this president or the people that he knows or who have put him into the White House. That's what it comes down to.
And this will be no different. All right, tomorrow there is an election here in Wisconsin. Yes, it's the Supreme Court. We know that. There's all kind of things. A lot of focus over the last, since 2020, about early voting and mail-in voting and everybody else. Well, yesterday was the last day to vote early in Wisconsin's Supreme Court race. As of Friday, the most recent data available said that 280,732 Wisconsin voters cast their ballots early, either in person or by mail. That, according to the Wisconsin Elections Commission, that represents about 70% of those who requested an absentee ballot. So that's pretty good. The final voter turnout in the race will include how many people cast their ballots at the polls on Election Day. We know that. Turnout for the Supreme Court race, and we've talked about this a lot, far lower compared to the two previous state Supreme Court races. Experts previously told the Journal Sentinel that the turnout in this election is typical of an average election. So, yeah, I think it would be almost impossible to match the intensity of last year's election. So among all counties, Milwaukee, Dane, and Waukesha counties have cast the most absentee ballots so far. Milwaukee County received 46,000, a little over 46,000 absentee ballots. Dane County received just over 40. Waukesha just below 35,000. And of course, you know this. These are the three most populous counties in Wisconsin. Voters can still cast their ballot early. You got to call your clerk's office for in-person drop-off instructions, or you can vote tomorrow by before 8 p.m.
Yes.
That's when the polls close.
Polls will open tomorrow morning at 7 a.m. So you can do it on your way to work. That's right.
Go after work. No excuse. Vote, vote, vote.
And if you need instructions on where to vote, myvote.wi.gov. And remember, you can always find your polling place there. But if you are not registered to vote and you are worried about the school board referendums, if you're worried about some of these circuit court judge races that are on several of these ballots, because let's remember, politics starts at the local level. Mm-hmm. If you are worried about any of those and you are not registered to vote, you can do so at the polls tomorrow. Have your ID, bring a bank statement or a bill with your current address on it, and you can register at the polls and cast your vote. I mean, I know this one's gone a little under the radar for several different reasons. I know that here in Wisconsin, we're probably tired of talking about elections and voting because we do it so often. But at the same time, this is literally the start of the election season here, and this is what is going to start shaping our state from the ground up with the courts and with the referendums. And if you're worried about property taxes, remember, 72 counties have referendums on the ballot for property taxes and funding of those school districts. So it is important to be at the polls. And we're going to have some coverage here tomorrow night, by the way.
Sure.
So we're going to be doing web-based coverage and a blog coverage of the events over the night, and so you can tune into our social medias and hear our interim news director John Scott covering the elections tomorrow evening.
And if you're one of these voters who says, I don't know too much about these Supreme Court justices, you could go to civicmedia.us. We had a nice conversation with candidate Chris Taylor the other day. We did reach out to Maria Lazar. She declined to join us. But if you want to know what Chris Taylor is thinking about her candidacy for the state Supreme Court, you go to civicmedia.us. You can click on the show tab. It's a process, but you'll get there. Just look for Daybreak, and then somehow there's, you know, whatever.
There's
you know
logos and there's
work.
Things.
Yeah,
and all
you know,
of that.
You know what to do. So go and do that and see what's up. But don't forget to vote. This is very exciting. I know I'm still enthralled by this. Artemis II astronauts are already setting a new record. They're going for a distance record now. Mm-hmm. They launched last week. It's the first trip to the moon since 1972. Three American astronauts, one Canadian astronaut, chasing Apollo 13's maximum range from the Earth. And that is going to make them our planet's farthest emissaries as they swing around the moon without stopping. They're going to swing around it today, and then they're going to head back home. Their roughly six-hour lunar flyby promises views of the moon's far side that were too dark or too difficult to see by the 24 Apollo astronauts who preceded them. A total solar eclipse also awaits them as the moon blocks the sun, exposing snippets of shimmering corona. Not the beer, friends. No. Actually, something of it. So right now, Apollo 13 holds the distance record from Earth. Their astronauts missed out on a moon landing. You know the story when one of the oxygen tanks ruptured. Well, Artemis II astronauts are following the same figure eight path since they are neither orbiting the moon nor landing on it. But the distance from Earth should exceed Apollo 13 by nearly 3,400 miles.
Wow.
During the flyby, the astronauts will split into pairs and take turns capturing lunar views out their windows. Get out of the way, Bob. I want to see the moon, too. Shut up. So they're taking shifts. They're professionals. They know what they're doing. But this is exciting.
It is
so
exciting.
So now they're going to whip around the moon,
yeah.
And then they're going to...
I love
and when
it.
I say they're hightailing at home, it's going to take a while.
It's going to take a few days. But yeah, it is really cool. So make sure you're paying attention, because if you love science, this will be your jam. It is 8:19 right now. You are listening to Daybreak. I'm Jamie Martinson.
And I'm Brian Noonan. Jamie has a civics lesson for us coming up next on the Civic Media.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
8:22 right now. You are listening to Daybreak. Thank you so much for joining us today on the Civic Media Network. My name is Jamie Martinson.
And I'm Brian Noonan. And yes, it is time for a civics lesson because... After the president so eloquently took to Truth Social yesterday and decided it was time to, well, basically toss out Iran and threaten them. Here's the tweet or the post, just so you remember what he wrote. Tuesday will be power plant day and bridge day, all wrapped up in one in Iran. There will be nothing like it. Open the effing straight, you crazy bastards, or you'll be living in hell. Just watch. Praise be to Allah, President Donald J. Trump. That reignited talk about the 25th Amendment, which a lot of us know, have a cursory knowledge of, that it means you can remove someone from office. Well, I messaged Jamie and said, you want to have class tomorrow, Jamie? And Jamie jumped at the chance,
of course.
So please educate us, Jamie, on the 25th Amendment.
All right. So we'll run through this pretty quickly, because at least the first three sections, because I think section four is the one that everybody is focused on right now. Okay. So the 25th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution was ratified in 1967. And this it came about after the confusion that followed the assassination of John F. Kennedy. Before that, the Constitution didn't really clearly explain what to do if a president was alive but unable to do the job. So in order to understand the 25th Amendment, let's go through the first three sections really quickly here. So in Section 1, it makes clear that the vice president becomes full president, not temporary, if something happens. This settled earlier confusion from cases like John Tyler, who set the precedent by assuming full powers after William Henry Harrison died in 1841. Then there's Section 2, and this has been used twice in real life, both in the 1970s during major political upheaval. Gerald Ford became vice president after Spiro Agnew resigned, then became president after Richard Nixon resigned. Ford then picked Nelson Rockefeller as vice president, which essentially showed how the system works back to back. Then you have Section 3 that's been used a handful of times, including by Ronald Reagan in 1985 and George W. Bush in 2002 and 2007 during routine medical procedures. And in fact, in 2021, speaking of Kamala Harris, as we were last hour, she became the first woman to hold presidential power briefly while President Biden underwent a routine colonoscopy. In those cases, power was transferred just for a few hours while the presidents were under anesthesia. Now, this leads us to Section 4, which, as I said, I think this is where a lot of people are focused right now. Now, Section 4 has never fully been used, Brian, but it has been discussed during several presidencies when questions came up about a president's health or their behavior. I believe the Section 4 was also talked about during Ronald Reagan's presidency, when it became apparent that he was mentally declining, right? So this requires the vice president and a majority of cabinet members to act together, not just one person. And this is where it's going to get tricky if you're thinking that this might be an option for this particular president. If there's a dispute, Congress has to vote, and it takes a two-thirds majority in both chambers to keep the president out of power. Now, that's the same high bar that's used to override the presidential veto, so it's intentionally difficult. This amendment does not define unable. We're going to put unable in air quotes, and it leaves that term flexible for different situations like illness, injury, or other incapacity. It is completely separate from impeachment, which deals with conduct or crimes. The goal is stability. That is what the 25th Amendment was set up to do, because it makes sure that there is always someone clearly in charge of the U.S. government. It has only been fully tested during the political crisis of the 1970s, when it helped guide a peaceful transition of power. And the 25th Amendment, as it stands, has become a key constitutional safeguard during times of crisis, uncertainty, or concern about presidential fitness. And in fact, if you remember back to 9/11, there was also conversations about the 25th Amendment if something were to happen to George W. Bush, why they were moving him from basically Air Force Base to Air Force Base, making sure he was protected during those attacks. But that is essentially the 25th Amendment. So if you are banking on Section 4 of the 25th Amendment, good luck with this particular Congress.
Yeah, that's not, it's not going to happen. I mean, it's sad that we have this in the we have this law, we have it in the Constitution, and it just is never going to be used.
Right.
And if there's ever a point where we look at the behavior of a president and say this is dangerous to the country, normal is long gone. But a tweet like or a post like this is so far beyond the pale that we do need to do something. He's making all these unilateral decisions going all the way back 2 months to he got us in a war just because. And now he is advocating not only war crimes by bombing civilian targets, but by just stealing the oil and making these threats. This is a dangerous guy. And let's remember why all this started. There's a couple of reasons. One is to just get all the oil. The other one is all of this is a distraction from the Epstein files.
Yes.
All of it is a distraction. So, and he's made these decisions unilaterally because he feels it in his bones with no evidence, and no one will stop him. And that's why the 25th Amendment will never be invoked.
No, it absolutely won't be, because that's just it. Even if you've got some Republicans on the side of, yes, this is what we need to do, first of all, then it needs to come to J.D. Vance to bring it to Congress. And then you have to get the 2/3 from both houses. And there is just enough opposition to an act like this with enough support for this president. I mean, we saw what Lindsey Graham had to say after the president posted this. He was all in favor of this. He didn't think there was anything wrong, and he supported this president, which is why you're never going to get that sort of 2/3 majority.
Lindsey Graham would flip the minute if there were ever some sort of, you know, dark cabal that was plotting now, because Trump put into effect everything they wanted for Project 2025.
Right.
He's outlived his usefulness now, but Lindsey Graham would flip his allegiance in a second.
Mm-hmm.
In a second.
Yeah.
Cow goggles. Yes. Cow vision. You want to know what it's like to see what a cow sees? It sounds funny, but there's a serious, serious reason for it. We'll talk about that next.
It's 8:29. You are listening to Daybreak. This is the Civic Media Network.
Local voices, statewide impact. It's Daybreak with Brian and Jamie.
Good morning, and thank you so much for joining us today. We do appreciate it. Hopefully you are having a great start to your Monday. My name is Jamie Martinson.
And good morning, I'm Brian Noonan. Now, people, this is something that I'm sure a lot of our listeners in the rural markets understand, but there's a lot of us who don't. But people who work in animal agriculture know the importance of keeping stress levels low for cattle, pigs, and other livestock. The challenge is understanding how the animals see the world and what triggers their stress. The University of Wisconsin River Falls Humane Handling Institute has turned to augmented reality in an effort to let farmers and staff from meat processing plants see their facilities through a cow's eyes. Now, cow vision goggles might sound hilarious and like a funny concept, but are they the future? Ashlyn Kirk, program manager of the UW River Falls Humane Handling Institute, joins us now to explain the significance of animal eye simulators. That's the real name. Ashlyn, thank you for being here. Now, I'm going to apologize in advance, but to me, the idea of cow vision goggles seems hilarious. I want to know what cows see. The thought of being a cow for a while sounds great, but it is serious business. So what is the importance of getting an animal's perspective throughout the processing chain?
Yeah, that's a great question. First of all, thank you so much for having me today. I'm so excited to talk about these cattle vision goggles. So the importance of knowing how an animal sees the world can, like you said, really minimize the stress and fear that an animal would experience going through these facilities. And that makes all the difference. So if you can design a facility with animal behavior in mind, they will move through it easier. And it'll be an easier and safer process for the animal and the handler.
Now, Ashlyn, when you put these goggles on, because obviously it's the people who are wearing the goggles, let's make sure we make that clear first and foremost.
Yes.
Can we get the cows a goggle, though?
I think that is a thing.
Okay. All right. What does it actually look like, though, when you put these goggles on? And what, as somebody who's had these on, what jumped out to you right away?
Yeah, so I think I can describe a little bit about the setup first.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So the person wearing or experiencing cattle vision is wearing virtual reality goggles. And then they're also wearing a helmet that has a 360-degree camera mounted to it. So this camera is then connected to a laptop that runs the augmented reality cattle vision software. So there's two people involved in the process. One that is seeing the world like a cow would. And then the second person is walking behind them and making sure they don't trip or run into anything, because it is very disorienting when you put those goggles on right away until you get used to it. So
is there a difference between how the cow, how a cow sees something and how we see something? Is that why you say it gets disoriented? What's the difference?
Yes, there is a big difference. So cattle have eyes that are located on the sides of their heads. So unlike us, we have eyes on the front of our heads. Cattle have eyes on the sides of their heads, so they can see a very wide range of vision. So what I say when I, what I mean when I say that is we can see in front of us about 180 degrees pretty well. Like our blind spot is behind our ear. Mm-hmm. But cattle, in comparison, can see about, we estimate 310 to 330 degrees around them.
Oh.
Okay.
Yeah, so they have a blind spot only directly behind them.
Wow.
So you can see pretty much the whole way around you, but sharpest point of vision will be right in front, and then the rest will be really blurry, but you can still see shapes and movement.
Does that also explain why a cow kicks, like when you're milking it, if they don't know you're coming up behind it?
Yes.
Okay.
We talk about that a lot. When you're coming in and out of that blind spot that's directly behind them, that's the most dangerous spot that you can stand when you're approaching a cow.
Wow.
Now, is it like dogs? Can cows see color, or is it like dogs where we think everything is kind of shades of gray?
Yeah. So cattle have dichromatic vision. So they can see colors, but it is different than we can see colors.
Okay.
So we can see the whole color spectrum, and cattle have a hard time differentiating between different visual light wavelengths. So they can see in shades of blue and yellow and browns primarily.
Oh, wow. Okay.
We're talking with Ashlyn Kirk. She is the program manager at UW River Falls Humane Handling Institute. Now, you mentioned that cows can see 300 degrees, and you mentioned that when you put the goggles on, it's very disorienting. So what does that mean for how they move through their space when they can see so much around them?
Mm-hmm. So cattle are really... That's a great question. So when cattle are moving through facilities, they can see pretty much the whole way around them. And
yeah.
They can everything, yeah, except for right behind them. So when a handler is moving cattle, they use that sight and the point of balance and the flight zone to move animals, because they can come at certain points to move them forward or behind or back, depending on where they are in the facility. So cattle can see motion to their side, but it's not sharp vision until they like look directly at you.
Gotcha.
Now, with these simulators, these clogs, how have they helped with your program at UW River Falls when you've been developing the facilities? And explain, for those of us who aren't in agriculture, when we use the word facilities, are these just the holding areas, or as they go to the, you know, to the final resting place to become dinner? What kind of facilities, and how have they changed how you're approaching things there?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I'll talk a little bit about the Humane Handling Institute and what we do, and then I'll go into that question. So the Humane Handling Institute is a first of its kind training center for meat industry personnel. And it's specifically focused on humane handling and humane slaughter. So we do a lot of hands-on training that is really based on research that we do in our animal welfare lab here at the University of Wisconsin River Falls. And then we do a lot of outreach and get that information into the hands of the people that actually use it and move livestock every day. So how we've been incorporating this technology so far is we've been using it in our hands-on training courses to have people that are handling livestock every single day. Oh my goodness, My light's turned off here. I'm not moving around enough. But people that are using this knowledge every single day, and I kind of lost my train of thought here.
Well, so how have they changed how you design the facilities, or, you know, what are the biggest takeaways as you've been using this software to say, okay, this is, we need to change this approach. We need to change this as far as how we're moving the cattle through these different facilities.
Yeah, that is a great question. So I think it really helps people put themselves into the hooves, I should say, of the animals that they're handling. But what we've seen is we've walked through the facilities at our campus farms, and we've made some changes based on lighting. So another thing that cattle see differently is their pupils dilate differently than ours would. So when, now that the lights just went off in here, that's a great segue.
Exactly.
But cattle, when there's a drastic light to dark change, it takes longer for their eyes to adjust to that difference. So when they see bright light, it's like when we've been working in our office all day and then taking a step outside and it's really bright for a few seconds before your eyes adjust. So cattle, it takes, it's like 15 seconds for their eyes to adjust.
Oh, wow.
Instead of just like right away.
Okay.
So the different, and it's different when you're moving from light to dark as well. So the darkness looks really dark for a while until their eyes adjust to it.
So is the key keeping the lighting in the facilities at a constant level, or what change did you make to adjust to that?
So yeah, making the lighting as uniform as possible, especially at the entrance to an indoor facility. So that spot has to be really well lit. Otherwise, when animals are coming from outside to inside, it really looks like a dark cave that they're going into, unless you have really good lighting there. And cattle especially like to move toward light. If you're moving them toward a certain part of your handling facility, it's better to have light there so they'll move toward it. That's one thing. And then another thing is solid-sided gates really help.
Oh,
why is that?
So solid-sided gates really help because, like I said, they can see all the way around them. So there's a lot of different parts that they can get distracted by. Like if someone is standing on one side of the gate.
Makes sense.
That does make a lot of sense.
You want to limit that vision as much as possible.
That's what Parker tries to do with me. Blinders.
Yeah.
Keep me moving in one way. So again, this is, and if my questions seem rudimentary, it's just I am not an agriculture expert, but besides sound and being distracted by sight and the light, what kind of stressors other than those will these goggles help professionals eliminate so that the cattle is a little more humanely treated as they move through the process?
Mm-hmm. I think a good point to talk about is handlers not getting frustrated as much with the livestock that they're handling.
Oh, okay.
So because they can better understand how these livestock species see the world, if the animal is stopping at one certain part of the facility, they can make changes to their facility to help move them through it.
Gotcha.
Okay.
In a less stressful way. And they also can keep that in the back of their mind, like, oh, they might be stopping at this, and then changing that.
So, that makes sense.
So, Ashlyn, will this help farmers on a day-to-day basis as well? I mean, you mentioned the stress to the animals, which can help with milk and better meat quality and things too. But on the farms, does this help with saving time? Is it the money? Is it the stress? Can it be all of the above on our average family farms?
Yeah, I think all of the above. Everything that you said really makes sense to me. And it also helps safety-wise when animals are and humans are interacting, it can be dangerous sometimes. So as long as we're taking that into consideration too.
Are there goggles in the works for other animals? Like, what if I want to know what a pig's eye view of things is, or a chicken?
Yes. So we have cattle vision. We also have it for pigs and horses as of now, we've really just rolled out cattle vision.
Okay.
And the software programmers that we worked with to purchase this equipment are also working on sheep vision currently. So that is the next thing that there's being developed.
I would love dog vision. I really would like to know what my dogs are looking at when they go outside. I go, what are you barking at? And I can put the goggles on and go, oh, that's not
exactly.
real.
Yeah.
That's not real. Ashlyn, thank you so much. This was fascinating.
Yes.
Ashlyn Kirk is the program manager at UW River Falls Humane Handling Institute. Again, it's cattle vision. Ashlyn, thanks so much. Have a great rest of the day.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
All facts, no fiction. It's Daybreak with Brian and Jamie.
8:52 right now. We hope that your morning is going well so far. Thank you so much for listening to the Civic Media Network. I am Jamie Martinson.
And good morning, I'm Brian Noonan. If you missed our last interview, I found it really fascinating because I am the first to admit I am not an agricultural guy. I appreciate how hard the work is. I appreciate what it's done, but since it's not part of my life, there's a lot I did not know. And Ashlyn Kirk was here. She was talking about these cow vision goggles, and I learned a lot about cows because who would have thought? Most people, they don't want to get involved in the process, you know.
Right.
They don't want to hear the story about cows being taken to the slaughterhouse and, you know. But this was fascinating about just helping not only the cows stay calmer, but the people who handle the livestock stay calmer, too, instead of going, why aren't they moving? Oh, well, these cows are easily distracted because they could see almost 360 degrees. So every little thing, you think I get distracted, I can only see 180 degrees. And I know that at the end of this, I'm not being turned into hamburger. So I have, you know, it's a whole different thing. So the point being, you can always go to civicmedia.us. You can hear the interviews and everything from the show. So go there if you want to. Go to the Daybreak tab. And if you're in agriculture and you haven't started this or done this, it might be something interesting for you to hear about too.
So. My husband just texted me, can you imagine if you could see 360 degrees?
Oh, that, you know, you wouldn't have to keep your head on a swivel anymore. Your head is a swivel. I always want to know what's behind
it. My husband's like, you get distracted by a gnat 20 counties over. He's like, I can't imagine if you could see that many degrees around you.
Yeah, there'd be no focus. But I also would be much more calm walking the streets. Even all these years with my wife and my daughter, I hate when people are walking right behind me.
Yeah, it's weird.
I don't like that. And I don't, you know, I was a bouncer for a number of years. I don't like things happening behind me. I always have to.
Yeah. Yep.
So I'd love cow vision.
I think it's fantastic. And think about, I mean, when we talked with Ashlyn, you think about what it could do for not only like the business of farming, but just for the farmers who raise a few cattle here and there, and how it could actually help them with better milk production or beef production. There's tons of possibilities with the cow vision. And now that I've learned also that it's for other animals, I think that's kind of cool
as well. Sheep vision, pig vision, horse vision. Got to get that dog, because I would all day just try to figure out what my dogs are looking at.
Do your dogs ever do that thing where they just stop and they stare at something, but there's nothing there?
Well, my wife's convinced it's because there's ghosts in there.
Oh, boy. Here we go.
So, yeah, Parker, I don't believe it either.
All right,
I am 100% no ghost guy. But there is a point where I see, and it's mostly the female one, smaller one.
That's what ours is.
She'll just all of a sudden just sit.
And stare.
And I'm like, what are you staring at? And I go and I stand behind her and I look and there's nothing.
Do you ever get down on her level to see if you can figure it out?
I do that.
No.
I've done that. Yeah. I do that too.
Insane.
And I'm like.
My question is, why would they be able to see them? If there are ghosts, why would the dog be able to see them?
Because
That doesn't make
because
sense to
they
me.
Don't, maybe because they don't see in color and they yeah. don't have the full spectrum and they can oh. see the spectral.
Their
beam
eyes are
that
more sensitive than ours. Hmm. Yeah.
Maybe. Yeah, their eye. Maybe they smell it first. Maybe ghosts have a smell.
I don't know.
I don't know. I don't believe
what do you
that
think ghosts
exist.
Like?
So. I don't know if there's ghost deodorant. I don't know if ghosts offend your olfactory system.
Well, we know what Casper did.
I don't believe they're there.
We know what Casper did after he stopped haunting houses and became not just the friendly ghost in movies. He had to come up with his own line of care products for ghosts. That's what he did. I'm convinced
perhaps.
Of it.
Yeah. Well, and he was financed because he allegedly is the ghost of Richie Rich.
There we go. There
Casper
we go.
Casper is the dead persona of Richie Rich.
There we go.
If you want to believe that, there's a conspiracy theory for you.
Ooh.
But yeah, all right. Well, Liz, we were going to get into what you could do with your leftover coffee, but we're running out of time. But we'll hit it anyway. Did you know that the average American drinks more than 3 cups of coffee a day, Jamie? Sure you did. I don't know. Did you? I drink a lot. I drink a ton.
I don't
of
drink
coffee.
Any. Very rarely.
You don't drink any coffee?
Very rarely. Very rarely.
Oh, my goodness.
Some
Parker,
days.
Do you drink coffee?
No, I don't drink any coffee at all.
Wow. So you are not. So am
I'm
I
sure
holding
you
up?
Stunned.
No, I'm sure you and Frank make up for Jamie and I.
I was going to say, stunned so Frank and silence. I are carrying the
yes.
average, keeping the average up
for this
show?
Yeah. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. All right. Or you guys are below average.
It could be that too.
I'm just starting stats.
No.
I'm not making
you
judgments.
Might be
I'm
very,
statistics.
Yes, it could be that for sure.
Germans consume 169 liters of coffee a year. Point being that creates a lot of leftovers, mm-hmm. a lot of grounds. Every day I throw out a giant cone filter full of
yes.
grounds. Well, you could be doing other things with those coffee grounds, Jamie. You can use here. Speaking of ghost deodorant, you can use them as odor
yes.
neutralizers.
I did not
yes,
know this.
I didn't know this either. You'll find bowls of coffee grounds or whole coffee beans. You can do the same at home. Helps remove cooking smells from your hands. Helps neutralize unpleasant odors. Perhaps your skin. You want a facial? You don't have to go to a spa and spend lots of money, Jamie.
The exfoliation of coffee
yes.
grounds. All right.
Take them into your shower.
We have plenty of coffee grounds in our household from my husband. It turns out if you're going to use it as an exfoliant, though, you should probably mix it with something like a little honey, maybe some olive oil, maybe a little sugar as well. And then you just massage it in and you get this. Yeah, you don't need to go to the overpriced spas anymore. You can do this
no.
at home.
Just use it for coffee. You can use it to scour things.
Pesticides is also interesting to me.
I didn't know this either. There's a lot I don't know. It's obvious. Yeah, for what do you do? Oh, earthworms
yeah.
are lured
moles,
to compost
voles?
Heaps by coffee grounds?
I
moles and voles.
Interesting.
So fertilizer. I heard this for blueberry bushes.
Yes.
That it's good fertilizer for blueberry bushes. I tried it. My blueberry bushes died a horrible death. But I'm not a farmer, as I've mentioned many
you
times.
You don't have cow goggles or blueberry vision.
I got nothing. I have a grocery store. That's where I do all my farming. I do all my harvesting at the grocery
right.
store. Thank you so much. We are out of here for another day, but we'll be back tomorrow because the news never sleeps, and we rarely do. So I'm Brian Noonan. Thanks for being here on Daybreak.
I'm Jamie Martinson. It is 8:59. Have a wonderful day, and thank you for listening to the Civic Media Network.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.